Today is Friday, the 15th day of July, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, we explore last night's terrorist attack in Nice, France. Also ahead, President Obama talks about race relations in the United States in a town hall meeting held last night. And there's a new study out that says if you're trying to save money on fueling your car, you may be harming the atmosphere. All of that and much more on today's International Edition. Stay with us. A driver killed 84 people, injured more than 200 others, about 50 remain in critical condition, when the driver steered his speeding truck into a crowd in Nice, France, Thursday night at a celebration of Bastille Day, France's independence holiday. France's president said some 50 people are critically injured, many of them children, many foreigners and police officers are also believed to be among the dead. The attacker has been identified by French police as 31-year-old Mohamed Lahouez Boalel, a French Tunisian who lived in Nice. Reports say security services did not suspect him of links to terrorist or extremist groups, although he had been known to police for drug and criminal offenses. No group has claimed responsibility, although the attack was celebrated online by Islamic State reporters. Speaking to his nation early today, French President Francois Hollande called the incident an attack on freedom.
La France a été frappée le jour de sa fête nationale.
He said France was struck on its national day on July 14th, a symbol of freedom because human rights are denied by fanatics and France is undoubtedly a target. Hollande has extended the state of emergency imposed after the November bloodshed, another 3 months following Thursday's deadly attack. He called a defense council meeting Friday with key ministers and left for Nice after that. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, meeting with his Russian counterpart in Moscow early Friday, said the attack on Nice shows the need to speed up international efforts to tackle terrorism.
I think people all over the world are looking to us and waiting for us to find a faster and more tangible way of them feeling that everything that is possible is being done to end this terrorist scourge and to unite the world in the most comprehensive efforts possible to fight back against their nihilistic and depraved approach to life and death.
Kerry and top Russian diplomat Sergei Lavrov led a moment of silence for those killed in the Nice attack. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, speaking at a summit in Mongolia, expressed her condolences for those killed, which she called mass murder, and called Germany's support for the people of France.
Aber an diesem Tage gilt die Solidarität.
Merkel said, today we are in solidarity. The people in Germany and everybody here are in solidarity with our friends in France. We stand together with many others side by side with France, and I am completely convinced that we will win this fight despite all difficulties. The U.S. President Barack Obama posted a statement on Twitter Thursday night, sending thoughts and prayers to the families of those killed in the attack and referring to France as the United States' oldest ally. Joining us now is VOA TV executive producer Linda Ring. Linda, you took a walk around the neighborhood around where last night's attack occurs, an attack you saw as you're in Nice on vacation. What'd you find today?
When you go into town, it seems like, oh, everybody's doing their tourist things. But then when you talk to people, you find out there was a lot of fear, a lot of, for instance, I went into a cell phone store today, and the person who was helping me had to leave suddenly because an employee was devastated because one of her relatives, she just had found out one of her relatives had died. I went into another business to buy some food, and the girl said her mother had been there yesterday evening, and her mother described a scene where beyond the terrorist attack, the crowds were rushing so much that they were falling on top of each other, and a lot of older people were hurt by the rushing crowds. and her mother just closed up the business, fearing that who knew what was going to happen. But a lot of people wanted to come in just to sit down and find some safety because nobody knew what was happening.
What is the overall feeling? Is it still one of panic and fear that you experienced last night? It sounds like it's almost turned into another type of emotion. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think there's some anger. I saw a small protest where people were saying assassins, and chanting and that. And when I talk to people, they say, "Well, we're alive, and we have to enjoy it." And but I think some of that is a cover. There's a lot of discomfort, a lot of unease.
You and your husband went to Nice for vacation, or as some people call it, a holiday.
Correct.
How do you feel now about after what has happened? I mean, what happens? Obviously, it pales how you feel about your vacation in comparison to what happened last night. But what about it? Are you angry? Are you upset? I mean, how do you feel about this?
Yeah. But I'm not surprised. I kind of, you know, when you come to a country that's hit by terrorism a lot, you kind of say, okay, you know, that could happen. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to watch the fireworks from the window of our apartment rather than in the crowds below, because it's just safer. I love Nice, and I've been coming here for probably 20 years, 25 years. And it's a shame. It's a shame not only in Nice, but it's a shame that anyone has to be afraid to get together in crowds. So it's something that you just feel sad about, or I do anyway.
Linda Ring is a executive TV producer for The Voice of America. And Linda, I hope you can enjoy the rest of your holiday, your vacation in Nice. And I thank you for spending so much time with us. Well, the question that arises now is, why has France had so many attacks over the past couple of years or so? And that is a question that VOA's Pete Heinlein posed to Thomas Sanderson. He's a senior fellow and director of the Transnational Threats Project at CSIS, a strategic and international studies think tank here in Washington. All right. Unfortunately, we have a technical problem. We'll try to get it back, that report, that interview for you. So in the meantime, let us check in with Andrew Palshevsky now to see what people are saying on social media about what's happened in Nice.
Well, we saw it just in the immediate aftermath of this attack. The hashtags begin to pop up. Hashtag Nice, of course. Hashtag Nice attack. And then very quickly after that, hashtag pray for Nice. And this is something that we've seen after many of these attacks. Pray for blank, insert the name of whatever the locale is. So already in the immediate aftermath, we were seeing people express their condolences. Facebook actually activated their safety check feature after this attack. This is something they've done before.
What is that?
It allows people to check in on Facebook and let their friends and family know that they're all right, especially when cell phone lines might be down or phone lines might be taxed. This is the fourth time, or at least the fourth time, in the past 5 weeks that Facebook has had to activate this safety check feature. They activated it in the Orlando shooting, after the Istanbul attack at the airport there, and then after the Dallas police shootings here in the United States. So this is at least the fourth time they've had to do this. And there was actually this story about one young woman who said, I was in Dallas a week ago. I went to Nice on vacation. In the past week, I've had to twice tell my friends and family that I'm all right and use this safety check feature. So it's a valuable social media tool, but it really does highlight just the terror and the anguish that people are experiencing, trying to find loved ones, trying to communicate with them.
Well, we should just check very quickly about what else is happening on social media today.
Well, the other big story in the U.S. is that Donald Trump has announced that he selected Indiana Governor Mike Pence as his running mate. And this has been kind of overshadowed by this Nice attack, to the point where Donald Trump, who was actually supposed to have a press conference today to announce that, postpone that press conference, and instead he tweeted out the announcement. He said, I'm pleased to announce I've chosen Governor Mike Pence as my vice presidential running mate. News conference tomorrow. That'll be Saturday at 11 a.m. Pence tweeting back. He said he's honored to join Donald Trump and work with him. Now, on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton's also using Twitter. In fact, she's letting others kind of speak for her. She's retweeting people like the governor of Connecticut, who said that Pence has a terrible record on guns, the lieutenant governor of California, who said he's been very anti-LGBT. So there's already the back and forth over Trump's pick. And one of the things that Hillary Clinton said, she said, if you think Donald Trump's conservative, you're going to love his vice presidential candidate because he's even more extreme than Donald Trump. Now, Pence's fans are firing back and saying he's a conservative stalwart. He'll add some gravitas and some government experience to the ticket. But this is just the beginning of the debate back and forth on Mike Pence.
Which makes it fascinating because there's a huge wing of the Republican Party that thinks that Donald Trump, the presumptive nominee, isn't conservative enough.
And a lot of people noting that on social media, saying this pick isn't a mistake, that he picked somebody who spent a dozen years in Congress,
sure,
who's been a governor of a state. He wants somebody who has maybe political experience and knows people on Capitol Hill.
Andrew Palczewski on social media. You can get in touch with Andrew at follow him on Twitter at Apal. Apal he is, but he's also Andrew Palczewski. And you can come communicate with me, too. And I keep forgetting what my...
At VOA Melman. So
yeah,
this is good.
You
tell them my Twitter handle. I tell them your Twitter handle. We have a nice back and forth.
That's good. Maybe we should have in mind on a piece of paper from now on. But I haven't done that yet.
We'll have to write it down.
By all means. Thank you, Andrew. We have located that interview that VOA's Pete Heinlein did with Thomas Sanderson, senior fellow and director of the Transnational Threats Project at CSIS, the Washington think tank. And Pete asked Thomas Sanderson, why France? Why is so many attacks being aimed at France?
Well, first of all, France has a very large population of North Africans, those of North African descent who are disenfranchised and marginalized politically, economically, socially, culturally, and feel that they do not have a stake in the future of France and are easy pickings for a group like ISIS or Al-Qaeda that plies them with promises of redemption, of respect, dignity, mobilization, money potentially, heroic status, revenge, and they are all too willing to take up this offer. And when you have the ISIS spokesman, Adnani, calling on Muslims worldwide to attack any way they can with a gun, a knife, a bomb, a car, a punch, a kick, then it becomes very easy to participate in this grand battle that they launched. And anyone can be a soldier in it, and anyone can go from a zero to a hero, and that's very difficult to turn away from if you don't have anything.
Is it too late now to head off this phenomenon? Are we in for years of this?
It is too late, I believe, largely. You would have to enact and see for many years such massive social and economic restructuring to pull a lot of these people out of the realm of the recruitable, essentially. But it goes way beyond that. There are issues of radicalization. There are issues of French foreign policy, which also figures into the attacks. And these are things that are not likely to change. So buckle your belt. I think we're going to be in for this bumpy ride for a long time.
Is there a difference between France and the United States, or should we be expecting this in the United States too?
We should be expecting this. We have seen this. There are few differences between the U.S. and France in the minds of those who are launching or inspiring or funding these attacks. So I don't see much of a difference in terms of our value as a target, though we are a greater target in terms of value because we are at the top of the hit list. But one big difference is that we have some distance, so we are less likely to get folks who have gone to the battlefield and returned to conduct attacks. That's to our advantage. However, just as we saw with this individual, you do not have to travel to the actual battlefield to play a role. You can be someone who attacks in place, and someone who is radicalized online or self-radicalized by what they see on TV, or someone who simply hears the call to battle that the ISIS spokesman has sounded and answers the call. So we should certainly be concerned. I think the country is concerned, and we have seen attacks in San Bernardino and in Orlando, and I unfortunately think we will see more.
That is Thomas Sanderson, the senior fellow and director of the Transnational Threats Project at the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies, speaking with VOA's Pete Heinlein. Among the top stories we are covering here at VOA, a driver killed 84 people, injured more than 200 others when he steered his speeding truck into a crowd in Nice, France. Donald Trump tweets his choice for vice president. A former Afghanistan official blames Pakistan for much of the violence in Afghanistan. And protesters pelt the South Korean prime minister with eggs and water bottles as he tries to allay fears of excessive radiation from a U.S. missile system being installed. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Many drivers today prefer vehicles that use less petrol and cost less to operate. But a new Canadian study suggests that although fuel-efficient technologies may provide more miles per liter, some of these new gas-saving internal combustion engines could actually contribute to climate change. To provide their customers with vehicles that offer high performance while using less gas, automakers have been turning to a small new type of fuel-efficient engine known as the gasoline direct injection, or GDI engine. The study found that while the GDI engines emit less carbon dioxide, they also produce higher levels of the climate-warming pollutant black carbon than traditional engines. The researchers suggest installing more effective filters in GDI engines at the risk of slightly lower fuel efficiency, but preserving the technology's net benefit for the environment. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA, and it's time to check business now in the wake of the attack in Nice, France, and some other variants that are happening around the world. The stock market goes up and down, and Joe Malandrino, International Edition's business correspondent, joins us live from New York, not far from Wall Street. And Jill, what do things look like?
Well, it's interesting. Despite the catastrophic events in Nice, the S&P 500 is on track for a perfect week as it stands right now, trying to make five straight days of record highs. We saw stronger than expected results from Dow component JP Morgan Chase yesterday, as well as upbeat economic data, strong retail sales this morning, and generally a positive sentiment for U.S. stocks right now. That's what's helping to move the major averages higher. I also think that investors are shrugging off the Bank of England's decision to leave monetary policy unchanged, and the fact that the markets are moving higher without another injection from the BOE is quite positive. Next week, we're going to start to see some momentum as we have a slew of earnings coming out with more financials kicking off the week. And right now, it looks like we're going to focus on company-specific news and let Brexit and central bank activity sort of take a back step to that.
Jill, I thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're a little short on time, so hopefully we'll talk more about it next week. Okay.
Have a great weekend.
You too, Jill. That's Jill Malandrino live with us. This is VOA.
Starting July 18th, VOA's team of correspondents, analysts, and online journalists will provide extensive coverage of the Republican and Democratic Party's political conventions. It's where delegates officially choose their presidential nominees ahead of national elections. So tune in and stay informed with VOA's coverage of this critical part of the U.S. presidential election right here on VOA. For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
Thank you. This is International Edition from the Voice of America. U.S. President Barack Obama says the country is expecting too much from its police, including answering society's problems. He made his comments last night at a town hall meeting at a Washington theater to discuss the recent spate of racial tension and police violence that have become a defining mark of his presidency. He was strongly confronted on issues of racial tension and police violence several times during the meeting. He's been a reluctant arbiter on race relations, but the country's first African-American president is being forced into the position after last week's shootings of black men at point blank range by police officers in Louisiana and Minnesota. Last week also saw the deadly ending in Dallas, Texas of a peaceful demonstration protesting police violence when a black man with a sniper precision killed five police officers and wounded several others. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who's a Republican who has called Black Lives Matter protesters hypocrites after the Dallas shooting, called on the president to do more to support police, including lighting up the White House with blue lights, a reference to blue police uniforms. The U.S. president defended his actions.
I have been unequivocal in condemning any rhetoric directed at police officers. So I think, Lieutenant Governor, you'd have to find any message that did not include a very strong support for law enforcement in all my utterances dating back to Ferguson. Because I rely on law enforcement to protect me and my family, just like everybody else does. So I appreciate the sentiment. I think it's already been expressed.
The meeting, broadcast on national television, featured appearances by many of the faces of the people affected by last week's fatal confrontations with police. That's going to wrap things up for International Edition for this Friday afternoon here in Washington. Heading into your weekend, please enjoy it. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now or Facebook at VOA Now. And follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for being with us. I'm Ira Miller.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 1986, Norman Borlaug, an agronomist and Nobel laureate who was widely recognized as the father of the Green Revolution, established the World Food Prize. This annual international award, known as the Nobel Prize for Agriculture and Nutrition, recognizes the achievements of individuals who have advanced human development by improving the quality, quantity, or availability of food in the world. This year, four individuals share the prize. All four work to improve the nutritional value of staple foods and to reduce hidden hunger, mineral, and vitamin deficiency. Dr. Maria Andrade of Cape Verde, Dr. Robert Mwanga of Uganda, and Dr. Jan Lowe of the United States work for the International Potato Center. They were honored for developing the orange-fleshed sweet potato, the single most successful example of micronutrient and vitamin biofortification. Plant scientists Dr. Andrade and Dr. Mwanga bred the sweet potato to be particularly rich in vitamin A, while Dr. Lowe structured nutrition studies and programs that convinced almost 2 million households in 10 African countries to plant, purchase, and consume this food. Vitamin A deficiency is one of the most pernicious forms of undernourishment in the developing world and the leading cause of child blindness there. It causes stunting, weakens immunity in children under the age of 5, and increases their risk of dying from diarrhea, measles, and malaria by around 22%. Dr. Howarth Buis of the United States, the founder of Harvest Plus at the International Food Policy Research Institute, pioneered the implementation of a multi-institutional approach to biofortification as a global plant breeding strategy. As a result, crops such as iron and zinc-fortified beans, rice, wheat, and pearl millet, and vitamin A-enriched cassava, maize, and orange-fleshed sweet potatoes are being tested or released in over 40 countries. These men and women represent the very best of their field, and they chose to put all their talent, energy, and skill in service of a better world, said USAID Administrator Gail Smith. Congratulations to our laureates. You have proven that science matters and that when matched with dedication, it can change people's lives. Thank you so much for everything you do to build a more food-secure world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the